Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 395, Tangled Webs, Deep Politics, Parapolitics, and Proxy War in the Middle East. This is being recorded on January 19th of 2003. The subject of the broadcast will be a complex one, and there will also be many references to other programs. Sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey, has made the entire For the Record series available online on Real Audio. More recent programs streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery. Older shows available for download only on a longer URL connected, not or linked, not only to the WFMU.org/Dave Emery website, but to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at SpitfireList.com. The SpitfireList.com website will also have a detailed article-length description of For the Record program number 395 up and available within a week or so of the airing of this program. Now, in the title of the broadcast, Deep Politics, Parapolitics, and Proxy War, I want to specify what I mean by a couple of those terms. Peter Dale Scott, the brilliant Berkeley researcher, has discussed deep politics and parapolitics, parapolitics being clandestine power political arrangements that were set up in order to effect things, but not necessarily in the view of the public. And often when those parapolitical relationships are maintained over a long period of time, they become deep political relationships. They escape or move beyond the control of their original architects and often become a dictator, so to speak, of events themselves. In the Middle East, I think we're looking at a great many things, including parapolitical relationships that arose during the Cold War that have evolved into deep political relationships beyond the control of their original architects. And we're also looking at what I believe to be proxy war, quite literally the use of some of the Middle Eastern and Muslim populations of the world as proxy warriors by an underground Reich, literally a Third Reich gone underground, against not only the United States, but democracy in general. A key element of that underground Reich assault is a very powerful fifth column utilizing economic and political forces in the United States that are heavily overlapped with the petroleum industry and with the interests of George W. Bush and his family. There are many other programs in which I've touched on some of these concepts, and they are available from Spitfire and from WFMU in both written form and in audio. So if you'd like to listen, listen to the WFMU website. If you'd like to read, read on the Spitfire website. Hopefully people will do both. Now, as I'm speaking on January 19th of 2003, much of the world's attention continues to be focused on the Middle East and around the maneuvering vis-a-vis the U.S. and Iraq. I believe that is a situation that has been seriously oversimplified by advocates on both sides. Both people who are advocating not going to war and people who are advocating going to war, I think, have misunderstood and drastically oversimplified the situation. I think there may be reasons for U.S. military action against Iraq, but they have not been effectively stated publicly, and that is an important thing. At the same time, I think that much of this country's not this country, but much of the Bush administration's interests in Iraq, quite simply, has to do with oil. That's hardly an original perception. I think there's much more going on vis-a-vis Iraq than just oil, but not as far as the Cheney and Bush families are concerned. We're going to talk about some of the deep politics and parapolitics vis-a-vis Saudi Arabia and how that may bear on the coming situation in Iraq. But in contemplating what's taking place in that region, I think it's important to understand that one of the key diplomatic posts that is being used by the United States in order to effect diplomatic relations with so-called friendly states in the Middle East is an assistant undersecretary of state position that was created specifically for its current occupant. That occupant is Elizabeth Cheney, the daughter of Vice President Dick Cheney and also oil man Dick Cheney. She is a deputy U.S. assistant undersecretary of state, and her main focal point is diplomatic relations with so-called friendly states in the Middle East. She apparently is playing a very significant role with regard to U.S. Diplomatic maneuvering with Saudi Arabia and in regard to Iraq. Obviously, she is Dick Cheney's daughter, and Dick Cheney is an oil man, just like George W. Bush. Elizabeth Cheney's role in the Middle East is being discussed in an article in the Financial Times of Thursday, January 16th of 2003. This is an article by Rula Khalaf. It's headlined, quote, "Iraq will cause a change in the region and make America's enemies desperate." Subheaded, "Some in Washington see the overthrow of Saddam Hussein as the key to bringing democracy to the Middle East. Others fear the instability that could follow." And whether it turns out to be a key, whether if the U.S. does in fact go to war, and if that does in fact bring democracy to the Middle East or instability, it is important to understand that much of the U.S. hand in the Middle East from a diplomatic standpoint is being played by Dick Cheney's daughter, Elizabeth. Skipping down in the article, we read, "Yet the work assigned to Ms. Cheney, a deputy U.S. assistant undersecretary of state and daughter of the vice president, is hardly diplomacy as usual. The focus of her efforts is countries in the Arab world. Her newly created post is at the forefront of U.S. efforts to instigate political reform among the authoritarian regimes long regarded by Washington as allies." And skipping down of U.S. policy in that region, one hawk is quoted as referring to Saudi Arabia and its role vis-a-vis Iraq. "Development of Iraq's oil resources will reduce U.S. dependence on Saudi Arabia, the country that produced most of the September 11th hijackers and one that many in Washington see as in the most urgent need of reform. The ruling Al Saud family would have to either change its ways or be replaced, possibly by younger, reform-minded members of the family." Well, no doubt the signals coming out of Washington these days, with policy being governed in the Middle East by George W. Bush, the son of George Herbert Walker Bush, and by Elizabeth Cheney, the daughter of Dick Cheney. I'm sure that inspire people in the Middle East who would be afraid of being replaced by reform-minded younger members of the family. Obviously, by the way, I'm being facetious. A couple of interesting considerations vis-a-vis Iraq and Saudi Arabia. First of all, as noted in a recent For the Record program, Saudi Arabia has agreed to allow the United States to use military bases in Saudi Arabia. This is an article by Eric Schmidt from the New York Times, carried in the San Francisco Sunday Chronicle of December 29th of 2002. It's headlined, "Saudis to let U.S. use air facilities in Iraq war," subtitled, "Kingdom quietly backs off earlier refusals." Saudi Arabia has told American military officials that the kingdom would make its airspace, air bases, and an important operations center available to the United States in the event of war with Iraq, senior military officials say. Saudi Arabia was the main staging area for U.S. forces in the 1991 Persian Gulf War, but conflicting public statements by top Saudi officials over the past several months have cast doubt on the Saudi support for military operations against Iraq this time around. In For the Record 390, Political Plate Tectonics, I noted the flak from Saudi Arabia about a crackdown on terrorist financing. This at the same time as there were indications of serious political plate tectonics moving in Washington. Former Secretary of the Treasury Paul O'Neill was replaced. It was Paul O'Neill who authorized the March 20th Green Quest raids that exposed links between al-Qaeda and the Republican Party and the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization, and also the links of those organizations to the al-Taqwa milieu. And I noted that there appeared to be some shifting of political plate tectonics with regard to Saudi Arabia in December. What I'm wondering is to what extent Saudi Arabia is basically dealing behind the scenes, and to what extent the Saudi links to September 11th and to al-Qaeda and to al-Taqwa will be suppressed. And in turn, Saudi Arabia will give the United States a hand in Iraq. Obviously, that article suggests that for one reason or another, the Saudis have changed their mind about letting the U.S. use military bases in that country. Also, there is a question of who is going to be financing the post-war situation in Iraq, which may last for many years, and it may require a great deal of money. one suggestion would be made here, one suggestion I want to proffer is that perhaps some sort of a deal has been made in exchange for a continued toleration by Washington of the status quo in Saudi Arabia, including the oblique attitude of the, or the ambiguous attitude, I should say, of the Saudis toward al-Qaeda. Many of the Saudi elite fund al-Qaeda, while officially the Saudis decry it. One wonders whether the Saudis will perhaps foot the bill for the rebuilding of Iraq. I also wonder to what extent Saudi bin Laden Group may actually get some of the construction contracts to rebuild Iraq. I tend to doubt that we'll be told if that's the case. Also, there have been worries that if, in fact, there's a war in Iraq, it may disrupt the world's oil supply. This has been exacerbated with the general strike that's taking place in Venezuela. Saudi Arabia has basically been walking point, as we'll see in a minute, for U.S. interests or petroleum interest, petroleum industry interests in the Middle East. They're advocating an output, an increase in oil production, which would be to the liking of the Bush administration, because it would make the potential adventure into Iraq at least more viable from an economic standpoint, by therefore being less threatening to the world's petroleum reserves. So in addition to allowing the U.S. to use Saudi bases against a war with Iraq, has there been a behind-the-scenes deal to suppress the Saudi connections to September 11th in exchange for Saudi economic support in the rebuilding of Iraq, and in exchange for Saudi support in increasing oil output by the OPEC countries, thereby making an Iraqi adventure more realistic? A couple of things to consider in that regard. A New York Times op-ed column from yesterday, Saturday, January 18th of 2003. Op-ed column by Frank Rich titled, Joe Millionaire for President, skipping down and talking about the many questions that obtained about the Bush tax cut program. Nor does anyone know what vanquishing Saddam and then governing Iraq will cost in either dollars or lives. Lawrence Lindsay, the chief White House economic advisor, was fired after he put the bill at $100 to $200 billion. But William Nordhaus, the Yale economist, puts the Lindsay estimate at the low end, with the high end being $1.6 trillion over a decade. Whatever the number, the cost of the war isn't being factored at all into the budget proposal that the White House will send to Congress, according to USA Today. So again, the Saudis are going to let us use their bases. There remain questions about who's going to rebuild Iraq. Have the Saudis volunteered to help do that? Will Saudi Bin Laden Group, the construction company that's the epicenter of the Saudi the Bin Laden economic empire, get the construction contracts, or at least some of them? Also, the Saudis have been basically walking point for an increase in petroleum output by the OPEC countries. This, again, is something that is supportive of the Bush administration's situation vis-a-vis Iraq, because obviously a military adventure into Iraq will threaten world oil production, and unless there's an increase, the combination of the Iraqi situation and the Venezuelan situation might very well drive up the price of oil per barrel to a prohibitive level, and that in turn would cause economic collapse. The Saudi role in promoting an OPEC production increase was discussed in the Financial Times of Monday, January 13th of 2003. This is an article by Carola Hoyos. It's headlined, Saudis Lead Way on Rise in OPEC Quota. Subtitled, Riyadh Has Pleased Importers and Made the Greatest Gains. Saudi Arabia yesterday showed its muscle in pushing through a large increase in the output quota of the OPEC oil cartel, pleasing importing nations and gaining much of the additional market share. Quote, Saudi Arabia will get a lot of recognition from the world importing countries, including the U.S., for this, said John Lichtblau, chairman of the Petroleum Industry Research Foundation. This is the last sentence again. Saudi Arabia will get a lot of recognition from the world importing countries, including the U.S., for this, said John Lichtblau, chairman of the Petroleum Industry Research Foundation. So again, vis-a-vis Iraq and vis-a-vis Saudi Arabia, has a deal been cut? Will the heat be taken off the Saudi funders of September 11th? Will there perhaps be heat put on those in the United States who have been trying to expose the Saudi connections to September 11th? And in turn, is that why the Saudis are now going to let us use their bases? In turn, will they help to foot the bill for the rebuilding of Iraq? And they apparently are pushing for an increase in OPEC production. Another interesting thing, as I've said, will be to contemplate to what extent Saudi Bin Laden Group gets some of the major construction contracts in Iraq. And also, Iraq has a Shiite Muslim majority. And with that large country, with the world's second largest petroleum reserves on the border of Wahhabi slash Sunni Saudi Arabia, will there perhaps be a political deal cut for the marginalization or political neutralization of the Shiite majority in Iraq after a war? Again, I wonder if a deal has been cut between the Saudis and the United States. In the U.S., they suppress the Saudi role to September 11th, and in Iraq, the Saudis support the U.S. economically, militarily, and diplomatically in exchange for favors rendered. You know, listeners will be familiar with the concept of big things coming in small packages, and some of the rumination that I've engaged in with regard to a Saudi role in the Iraqi situation was spurred by an article that appeared in Newsweek magazine of January 13th of 2003. This is an article called Close Ties. It's by Michael Isikoff, and it reads as follows. With mounting criticism from Congress over its record in the war on terror, Saudi Arabia is beefing up its forces in D.C. Newsweek has learned that to strengthen ties with the White House, the Saudis have retained the high-powered law firm of former Texas GOP Congressman Tom Loeffler. That's spelled L-O-E-F-F-L-E-R. Loeffler, whose firm will be paid about $720,000 a year, is one of President George W. Bush's top political money men. He headed up fundraising for Bush's first gubernatorial campaign and served as finance co-chair for his presidential race. Loeffler also was tight with Dick Cheney. Quote, "You couldn't find anybody closer to this White House," unquote, said one D.C. consultant. A Saudi official says Loeffler will be used mostly to lobby on trade issues, but will branch out to matters such as terrorism financing when needed. Note that last sentence. A Saudi official says Loeffler will be used mostly to lobby on trade issues, but will branch out to matters such as terrorism financing when needed. The retention of Loeffler comes on top of another move that critics charge is designed to influence the White House. A $500,000 gift by Saudi Prince Al-Walid bin Talal to help fund the newly created George Herbert Walker Bush Scholarship Fund at Phillips Academy, Andover. Andover says the elite school won't reject the prince's money, and a Bush spokesperson says the former president, like his son, an Andover graduate, quote, felt it had been given in good faith, unquote. One, I think, cannot help but wonder whether that good faith, unquote, is Wahhabi Islam. But in all seriousness, one should note the long-standing business connections between the Bush family and the Saudi elite, including the Bin Laden family. One should also note the fact that both, as I've said before, both George Bush and Dick Cheney are petroleum industry executives. As we noted earlier in this program, Cheney's daughter, Elizabeth Cheney, is fulfilling a key diplomatic function in the Middle East. She's basically liaising with, quote, friendly, unquote, Middle Eastern regimes that would presumably include Saudi Arabia. And the relationship here between a prominent former GOP congressman whose law firm is going to be lobbying for Saudi Arabia, also somebody described as one of George W. Bush's top political money men, and somebody very close to Dick Cheney. This is a very, very, very important move here on the part of the Saudis. And note that at the same time, Prince Al-Walid, whose many, many connections run to Citibank, the correspondent bank in the United States of Al-Taqwa. Al-Walid himself is very close to Youssef Mustafa Nahda, the head of Al-Taqwa. And Prince Al-Walid has contributed money, specifically $500,000, to the George Herbert Walker Bush Scholarship Fund at Phillips Academy, of which both George's Bush are alumni. This article is very significant. It says that the Loeffler firm may assist with matters such as terrorism financing, and also George Herbert Walker Bush's scholarship fund at Phillips Academy is being underwritten in part by Prince Al-Waleed. Again, has there a deal been cut? Will the Saudi connections of September 11th be marginalized or perhaps even actively suppressed? Will people who have been calling attention to the September 11th Saudi connections be marginalized or actively suppressed in this country? And I wonder to what extent the political plate tectonics that I discussed in For the Record 390, I wonder to what extent that bears on the Saudi/Iraqi situation. Again, the Saudis are going to let us use their bases. Are they going to help rebuild Iraq? Will they foot the bill for the rebuilding of Iraq? If so, in exchange for what? In exchange for Saudi bin Laden Group getting some of the contracts? In exchange for a suppression of the Shiite majority in Iraq? Who knows what price has been paid? And in turn, will the Saudi pressure on OPEC to increase output, will that be repaid by Loeffler's firm as well? Again, very, very significant article. Big things come indeed in small packages. That reference, again, was Newsweek magazine, January 13th of 2003, article by Michael Isikoff. Close ties, former GOP congressman and Bush money man, Tom Loeffler's law firm is now representing the Saudis. Prince Al-Waleed is helping to underwrite a George Herbert Walker Bush scholarship at Phillips Andover Academy. We've been talking about some of the deep political and parapolitical relationships vis-a-vis the Middle East. I believe that there is a great deal more going on with regard to the Iraqi situation than we have been told. One of the things that is kind of disturbing about the entire approach being taken by both sides, which is that both sides are, meaning those who are for war and those who are against it, are very ungraduated in their assessment. I think there may very well be good cause or just cause for U.S. military action in Iraq, but it runs, those connections run through very different territory than the alleged Iraqi meeting with Mohammed Atta in Prague. The factuality of that meeting has been hotly debated. There may, I say may be, an Iraqi connection to the September 11th events through Oklahoma City and the Oklahoma City bombing, not necessarily through anything having to do with Mohammed Atta. And Prague, there are persistent accounts of Timothy McVeigh having been associated with Middle Eastern or Iraqi men, and McVeigh having been described as a protege of Andreas Strassmeier, the son of Helmut Kohl's former chief of staff, Gunter. Gunter was the architect of German reunification and himself the son of one of the founding members of the Nazi Party in Germany. And in For the Record 373, I discussed the Terror Motel, as an article in the LA Weekly described it, a motel at which, quite possibly, Mohammed Atta and others of the September 11th conspiracy were seen in combination with Zaharias Moussaoui. And this was the same motel that associates of Moussaoui and Middle Eastern / Iraqi associates of Timothy McVeigh were alleged to have utilized. If, in fact, there is a link between Iraq and September 11th, it would run through an area that nobody's going to talk about, and that is the Underground Reich and the Oklahoma City bombing. This is not something you're likely to see much discussion of. There are also unresolved questions about the possibility, and I say possibility, of Iraqi involvement with the foot-and-mouth outbreak in the United Kingdom. We've discussed that in For the Record 287 and 295, as well as number 3, For the Record 374. On the other hand, I also think that this administration is quite simply looking at Iraq from a variety of standpoints, basically two. They have no policy, and so this is a very good way of keeping everybody's attention focused on something other than what the Bush administration cannot deal with effectively. And it also reflects the prominent position of petroleum in this administration's policies. Again, the vice president and president are both petroleum industry executives. Iraq has the second largest oil reserves in the world. And I suspect that the administration is very narrowly focused on the superficial domestic political repercussions of keeping Americans occupied with war, and also the petroleum benefits to be derived from Iraq, and overlooking the devastating consequences that could take place as a result of U.S. Military adventurism in Iraq. Those negative implications, including not only detracting from the forces being used to combat al-Qaeda, but also exacerbating the ability of al-Qaeda and similar organizations to recruit fanatics from among the Muslim population of the world, the Arab population in general. Looming large in this entire imbroglio, I suspect, is the Underground Reich, which is manipulating things and sort of a lets you and him fight. As I've said in past programs, suppose you're the Third Reich and you've gone underground at the end of World War II, which it did. Suppose you want to take over the world, but you haven't got enough soldiers to do all the dirty work. One good way of doing things would be to get the Americans, the Israelis / Jews, and the Arabs to basically take each other out, and thereby killing three birds with one stone. And I suspect the Iraqi situation is part of that. Bear in mind that the deep politics and the historical politics of both Iraq and Saudi Arabia go back to the Third Reich with Ibn Saud, Alan Dulles, and Nazi spy Jack Philby having helped to found the Saudi state at the end of World War I, or in the post-World War I period, and with Saddam Hussein's uncle and political mentor, Khairullah al-Tufah, the developer of the Iraqi biological warfare program, being a devotee of Adolf Hitler and having fought for the pro-Nazi uprising in Iraq in 1941. Research credit on the following article goes to a member of the listening audience who got me this article from I Spy magazine. That is an intelligence community-oriented magazine. And in this, we're going to talk about a documentary film called Stealing the Fire about the German role in helping to arm Saddam Hussein with his nuclear capability. And for those people, again, who think that, you know, all this talk about Nazis and all that old stuff, that's old stuff, consider the following article. By the way, the documentary Stealing the Fire is a film that was produced by Eric Nadler, or Nadler, N-A-D-L-E-R, and he first got onto this particular investigative trail along with his co-producer John Friedman, the founder of the Documentary Center at Columbia University. Eric Nadler was working for Frontline on PBS and was doing a story about the BCCI scandal and about the arming of Saudi Arabia, and he came across information about Saudi Arabia having helped to bankroll Saddam Hussein's nuclear effort. Now, how about that? Some $5 billion to helping to bankroll Saddam Hussein's nuclear effort. And the key people involved with this were people who were associated with the Degussa firm, now part of E.ON. Degussa was part of the IG Farben complex and produced the Zyklon B that was used in the gas chambers in World War II, as discussed in For the Record 294. They also were heavily involved in getting Saddam Hussein much of his nuclear capability through their ironically named subsidiary, Nukem, M-U-K-E-M, probably not pronounced that way. Two of the key people involved here, Dr. Gernot Zippa and also Dr. Karl-Heinz Schaub, were people who were associated with one another and with the pro-Nazi nuclear effort in World War II. But we're going to talk about that in the second side of this broadcast because we're nearing the conclusion of this side. You've been listening to Side 1 of For the Record 395, Tangled Webs, Parapolitics, Deep Politics, and Proxy War in the Middle East. This is being recorded on January 19th of 2003. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.